I don't want to shortchange the two remaining speakers on this morning's presentation, so we may run over a bit into the lunch hour. The next speakers are Susan Stinson and Kenneth P. Whistler, both from Syracuse University. Kenneth Whistler is a senior audio engineer of the Belfer Audio Lab and Archives for the last 3 years at Syracuse, which bachelor degrees in radio and TV and electrical engineering from Syracuse. And he is responsible for the laser machine, which will be playing back cylinders of all sorts when it's completed. Susan Stinson holds the title of audiographer at the Belfer Audio Lab and Archive at Syracuse. Her responsibilities involve management of the archive collection of sound recordings. A native of New York all her life, Ms. Stinson has a degree from SUNY Potsdam, is currently working part-time toward an MLS degree at Syracuse, and is an active musician in areas of vocal music, conducting, and piano accompaniment. The title of their presentation is The Preservation, Cataloging, and Retrieval of Cylinder Recordings, circa 1890 to 1920. Ms. Stinson and Mr. Whistler.
Not yet, I don't need the lights on.
Okay. I mean, the podium.
Oh, no, I have this. We're going to start the presentation with a short recording that some of you will probably recognize. And if those of you in the back can't hear it, you could come up here and bite down on the table edge.
I'm getting ready for my mother-in-law, sung by Bob Roberts, Edison Records. My dear wife met me at the door, a letter in her hand. Said, Mother, still was busy as it now, isn't that just grand? She said she'd stay about 6 months or longer if she can. If she don't come, I know I'll be a disappointed man. I'm getting ready for my mother-in-law, getting ready for the fun. When she puts her face inside the place, she gonna take it on the run. If she should stay for just one day, I can hear the church bells chime. Oh, mother, 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 you'll have a dandy time. I taught my bulldog how to bite, the parrot how to swear. I saw the strings and legs and arms of our best rocking chair. I sprinkled soap upon the floor and polished it with that. If she falls down and breaks her neck, can I be blamed for that? I'm getting ready for my mother-in-law, getting ready for the fun. When she's on the floor inside the door, I can hear her roller skating sound. If she sits flat on our doorstep, I can hear the church bell chime. Whoa, mother, 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 you'll have a dandy time. I fixed a little room for her without one window pane. Turned on the steam and fixed it so it won't turn off again. No pictures hanging on the wall, it looks just like a cell. And when she starts to get in bed, she'll think she is in a Turkish bath. I'm getting ready for my mother-in-law, getting ready for the fun. When she starts to boil, her face will spoil, her makeup then will start to run. And Mama soon will be at rest, while the church bells sadly chime. Oh, mother, 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 you'll have a hot old time.
That sets the theme for this presentation. You're going to be seeing screens of the catalog records of that later on when Ken starts to talk about his portion of the project. My report will cover not only my own responsibilities, but also those of two other members of the project team who are not here. Ken will deal with the hardware and software selection and development for the project. This was a grant-funded project that we did for the purpose of making our cylinder collections accessible as a catalog and as re-recordings as well for researchers to use. We used the same microfilming procedure that was used for the Rigler-Deutsch Index, and we used a microcomputer for the cataloging of the cylinders. We started this in July of 1984, and it went for 15 months. It was funded by the U.S. Department of Education for the Strengthening the Research Library Resource Program. We had never cataloged any of our cylinder collection, so it was needle in a haystack kind of retrieval at that point. And we targeted three areas for attention in this project: the preservation, physical preservation and audio preservation, bibliographic control and the microfilming and indexing procedure, and the development and testing of an interdisciplinary retrieval system with the records online on a computer. Now, I think I need the lights out. Do we have a...
You need focus.
Yeah. There isn't one on here.
Can you read the lid? I'll go up and pull out it.
The preservation process provided us with permanent storage system and the re-recording. We're going to talk here about the storage preservation end of it. The re-recording is another speech, actually. So less than half of our collection had been stored in cabinets up to this point, and everything else was in crates. And the green cabinets on the left are what we had. So we had to go and investigate what kind of materials were available, what kind of cabinets were available at this point, because the green ones had been purchased a long time ago. So we determined that there were cabinets available. These are the type that have the drawers with the center divider, and they're designed to hold 5x7-inch index cards. And the depth is just perfect for cylinder cartons. So we ordered these. I believe we ordered 9, and then we ordered 4 more so that we would have enough to store all of the separate titles that we have. We can't see my notes very well. Now, each drawer holds approximately, you can see here, these are Edison gold molded cylinders. Each drawer holds 6 rows left to right and 9 cylinders front to back. The smaller cylinder cartons, such as the Blue Amberoles and the U.S. Everlastings, we can get 10 cylinders front to back. So we have a storage capacity of around 6,500 in these cabinets. And the cabinets set up this way give us storage that protects the cylinders from heat and light and dust and moisture, and protects them pretty well, too. It's supposed to be that way. We then proceeded to select the titles for the project. Three of us worked on this part of it, myself and Walter Welch and Elizabeth Oddy, who was in charge of the interdisciplinary retrieval portion of the project. And we had to select 1,500 titles. So we picked that number as being a feasible number to do in the time span we had. And we also had to pick English word, English text titles of songs or vaudeville sketches, something with lyrics in English and popular music. We were limiting ourselves to that for the purposes of the project. So we omitted cylinders that had 2 songs listed in the title because this presented problems with the cataloging software, and we felt that it would be much easier on all of us if we omitted those. Some titles got repeated from one type of record to the next, the 2-minute and the 4-minute, and between different companies. But we've left them in because sometimes it's interesting from the standpoint of the industry practice as well as the performances to compare 2-minute and 4-minute versions of the same song. This is another view of the other side of our room. We have approximately 8,000 cylinders now. About 3,000 are duplicates. After we finished getting the cabinets installed, we sorted the cylinders and put them in the drawers. I lined the drawers with sheets of half-inch thick foam cut to fit. This keeps the cartons from sliding around on the metal, which is a problem. And if the drawer is opened a little bit more forcefully than it ought to be, it absorbs some shock and it just gives them a little more protection. So we have done that to all the drawers. When we put the cylinders into the drawers, we checked the lids to make sure the numbers were correct, and we dusted them off. Some of them were quite dirty. We also wiped the rims of the cylinders so that the lettering was clear for the microfilming procedure. We also found that the drawers are removable from these cabinets. They lift right out of the suspended frames that they slide out in. And this meant that we could take a whole drawer over to the microfilming table without taking the cylinders out and without getting them mixed up or damaging them or mixing up, you know, caps or anything like that. So this also speeded up the microfilming process. Now for the microfilming, the company Mikael, which did the Rigler Deutsch filming as well, devised a table to fit under the camera that had a well in it, which we put the cylinder down into. It fit almost completely in, and the cylinder was just high enough out of the well so that it was level with the carton cap, which also has information on it, so that they were the same distance from the camera lens for the filming. And that worked very well. This is a picture of our microfilm photograph of a cylinder rim, which is the same as the recording you heard at the start. And the reproduction is quite good. The next one is a picture of the cap, and it's also quite legible. This is a picture of one page of the microfiche index. Ours is on fiche rather than rolls, and somewhere in the middle here is the, Ken can point to it, you can't see it, probably even in the front row, of the entry in the index for this same recording. When we started the re-recording part of the project, we needed a data collection sheet so that all the information pertaining to the cylinder could be gathered together in one place. And if you can't read this, I have a blank here if you want to look at it later. I devised this sheet that tells at the top all the information about the cylinder, the title, the performer, the cylinder number, the size of the groove, and there are places for dates if we had them. And then in the center part, the vertical columns were left for recording data such as the length of time the cylinder played, the number of the tape reel that it's on, and any processing comments, so that everything is all entered on one sheet. At the bottom, I had left space for the text transcription as well, and it really wasn't enough space, so I had to do those transcriptions on separate sheets, and that was for a later portion of the project, which I'll mention later on. But the sheet worked very well, and it meant that the cataloger could take this and she would have all the information on the physical description that she needed for the catalog records. She also used the microfilm pictures for sources of information. The rim of the cylinder is considered, of course, the primary source of information. And so that was what she started with in creating her catalog records. I think now we've come to the portion of the project where you're going to hear about the creation of the software and the computerization of the catalog. Ken Whistler will tell you about that.
Well, I just wanted to point out that I have an electrical engineering background, and I looked at this in a different way, not from a preservation problem or from a bibliographic problem or anything like that. It's more like an inventory problem to me to solve the software. So it was quite a revelation to try to find out how to think like a librarian might think, or someone who wanted to put this away in order to get out information that has more relevance to someone who's doing research. So for me, it was sufficient to put the information on something like DBase, or even a lot of public domain software that had just a database program. It was sufficient for that, but the problem was the only person who could get stuff out of a database like that would be someone who knew how to run the program. So the major task became to come up with a software product that looked like something that everyone else was familiar with. And I had two pieces of software that developed from that. The first one is an OCLC simulator. OCLC is what most of the libraries use for cataloging and keeping track of library cards, and it's a national database system. And it has a specialized computer screen, and it has a special look, and a special operator has to be trained for it, and so on. You can go to school for this sort of thing. And all I wanted to do was make something that looked like OCLC, but it wasn't OCLC. It was not OCLC. It was called NoCLC. It's close enough, because then the operator, the cataloger at home, they just behaved as they would normally behave and not have to learn one more new thing. There's a few things you have to learn because it's a microcomputer and so on. The other project was a thing called, well, we have up at our library, up at Syracuse University, they have an online card catalog system called Souliers. And what Souliers is a searching system. You put in, for a search, you put in a code for whether it's a title or the author or so on, and then you say what you're looking for. And of course, this is not Souliers, so it's Newliers. Now, we'll get to the hardware part. It was actually a pretty easy choice for hardware at the time. There is only one real microcomputer worth considering at the time. We were going to go with an IBM PC XT, that's the 10 megabyte version. And you know, we had the papers all signed, we had everything ready to go and order this thing, and then the AT was announced. So we immediately switched gears and got one of those with a 20 megabyte drive, so that became our hardware choice. The software choice, there really were only two products on the market that had the capability and the support on the campus that we needed. There was RBase, I think it was System 3 at the time, or RBase 3 or whatever it was called, RBase 4. And then there was DBase 3. And we decided to go with DBase because there were more people on the campus who could help develop this. I sort of walked into it. When I walked in, the first thing they said was, well, build the laser thing. And the second thing they said was, write the software. So I went with the DBase because there was a lot more support for that. At the time, all we had to do was just make it look like something else. That's something I realized all along, is the operator doesn't need to know what it is. They just need to know whether it's something that they're familiar with. It's the Turing test. You know, it doesn't have to be a woman in the next room on the teletype. It only has to act like a woman on a teletype. So let's take a look at some of the, pardon me? The Turing test? Yeah. Yes, please. Let's take a look at this. So this is an OCLC screen. This is a special OCLC computer screen, and it's very specialized. It has special characters and so on. I don't know if you can actually see them, but up in the upper left, there's a thing that looks like a backwards paragraph sign. There's some funny bar-shaped things, and you can't get these off an IBM PC, so we decided not to try to simulate everything. But the look and feel is what we were after. So here is the welcome screen, and it just tells you what's going on, I guess, recently with OCLC. And then the next thing is a search screen. And this tells me up in the upper left-hand corner, screen 1 of 2. The upper part of the screen up here, that's what's called the fixed field. Those are little pieces of information that are only so many characters long. And then down below, you see the 1, 0, 10 to the 40, the 007 field, the 028 field, over here on the left. And what those are referring to is what we would call the author field, the title field, the subject field, and so on. But in the MARC format that this is based on, they're going by numbers. they don't call them names, but you have a big book and you figure out what the number code is from that. So I had to learn OCLC, I had to learn enough of that in order to translate it into something we're familiar with, or that the operator is familiar with. And then down below you see the 245 field, that's the title field. The name of this, I think this is a search on the Sound of Music. And then let's take a look at the second screen. If it has more than one song, this is an album find, and so it has more than one song, you see there are about 10 or so 740 fields. And those are all the songs that are listed on this album. And that presented a problem in the software in DBase. So that was a nice choice to leave only one song per record in our project. Now, the other product called Souliers. This is their one of their search screens, a search result, and I just typed in subject, or rather title, Sound of Music, and it searches under sound and it searches under music, and this is, it got 68 finds, starting with sound and music, you see. And what it is you get a screen full of little short descriptions, just title, author, catalog number maybe, and where they are. If you want more information, you put in another code to get more information on a particular screen. And this is a large, this is the help screen, which tells you what the codes are, just what I explained earlier, and how it's done so that a person doesn't need a booklet. A person shouldn't have to know anything more than maybe to type in the word help if they're stuck. That was the idea. So let's turn on our computer. This is the screen of our AT. We went with color. Well, why not? You know, we got color, we might as well use it. And I used color as cues to sort of let the operator know that they were in a different system, because there are three or four different little pathways into the software you want. So it's just a welcome menu. The choice A, NoCLC, NewLears, or AudiFile. AudiFile is the database with the song titles and also has the words to the songs. So we chose the choice A there, and which one specifically, AudiFile, NewLears, and NoCLC, and I think we're going to go with NoCLC first. So there's the NoCLC welcome screen, and again, you still have choices. You're still not working in the database, you're just finding your way to what you want to do. I think here we're going to add a record, or rather view a record. And this is what the operator sees. So as close as we came, there's the fixed fields up on top, you see, and the red boxes is where you can enter information. And on the left are the number field names, 007, 028, and so on. The 245 field for the title. The biggest problem I had was that their DBase works with fixed field lengths. That means if you've got nothing in your field, the field's space is still stored. So down there on the bottom, there's some 500 fields, and they're empty, but they're stored, so they take up space. Our database takes up 6 megabytes of space, but there's actually only about 2 megabytes of real information in there. The rest is just blank spaces, because we had to plan for the longest record. So I worked back and forth with our cataloger to try to decide how many 500 fields we might need, how many 700 fields we might need. Pardon me? Oh, I didn't do that, no. that's the cataloger.
There are some typos.
That's right. We didn't have a spelling checker in this. And this always had three screens because it was already the longest record you're ever going to need. And you see, the interesting thing is we supply, for instance, you see the first 600 field there actually is a 50. Those are supplied by the operator because the 50, whether it's a 610 or 640, those all mean different things in the 600 category. And we left that in so that when we print these out or when we transfer these to another database, that special field information is allowed too. Here's the third screen. Once again, there's nothing in it, but we have space for the 700 fields. Okay, now we're in NewLears, and there really isn't anything, there's no welcome for NewLears. You just choose NewLears and then it says enter search. So this is a search for that song. I looked for the word, I think I looked for the word mother. Either that or, yeah, mother I think did it. And I went all the way through the database and it tells me that I have 25 finds, and you don't get a list of the finds. In NewLears you get a list of the finds right away, but here you get a list after you've gone all the way through. Although you can ask for just the quantity of finds, there's a mode called the terse mode. You just say terse. The next search is just gives you a number. It doesn't give you a response besides the number. It tells you how many finds you have, whether you're going to spend your whole day looking at screens or not. And this is the short form. This is a picture, slightly lopsided, of the help screen. The same idea. I just took a sheet of a printout of the one that they had and just redid it. Different codes, though. The code for CN there means call number. Here it means cylinder number. Code for BN, there's no such thing. That's the Belfer number in our system. That's the reel of tape that it is on and what cut it is on the tape. And there's the last code called GO, which lets you go directly to a number and get an OCLC screen without having to go out of one software and into the other. Now we're in the audi file database. I figured I would, you know, once again have a little fun. You know, this is, you know, audio engineering humor. It's a play on the word of audi file, because Beth Audi. Well, anyway, it's a file. Well, you get the idea. Beth Audi is
the project participant that we'll talk about in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we'll be hearing about Beth's part of the project. But what she essentially was doing was collecting, trying out the words on people of different disciplines and see whether they could, what they would think this these words would be under the category of. So it's a database, though, but the special thing about it, besides having a short printout of the title, author, and the composer, and so on, was to have a page full of words attached. And here's the words for I'm getting ready for my mother-in-law.
Is that in the notes field?
That's a
memo.
It's a memo field on DBase, which is very nice. This is the other thing that was handy about DBase, is that you could attach a memo database to it, and this is essentially an unlimited database page. I think in DBase 3 it's 4,000, but you can be clever enough. You know, you could have a one database just full of memo fields, and each memo field could then be 4,000 characters long, and so on. So it could be quite big. That's right. This is an editing screen we're seeing here. The curious thing about the way DBase works with memo fields is that as you go on and off them, as you edit them and come back off them, it doesn't get rid of the traces to the last version, to the backup. So your disk fills up very quickly because you're just going on and off. So what you have to do every once in a while is copy the whole database to another database and then bring it back. And this eliminates all these false trails that the memo fields leave behind. But that's the only thing that I'm aware of that DBase does for you that you really wouldn't want to do for you. Okay, and that's the end of that part of the project.
We just have I have to wrap up with a couple more portions of the project, and we're running right close to our time limit here. In the funds for this project, we're allotted money to buy bibliographic reference materials with, and we hunted around and acquired a lot of nice materials, books, discographies, dictionaries, manufacturers, catalogs, and brochures, and all that sort of thing. I have a bibliography with me. If anyone's interested, afterwards today or sometime this week, come ask me and I'll let you look at it. You've seen the results of most of the cataloging on the screen. Our associate music cataloger, Lori Winship, was hired specifically for the project. And the Beth Audi, her part of the project, which you were probably wondering about, she was hired to do the interdisciplinary retrieval pilot program of the project. That involved having about 200 of these cylinders completely transcribed, and I sat for several months and did that, and it was fun for a couple of weeks. So she took these texts and she used about 120 of them, and she selected five authorities in the field, five professors at Syracuse University in various disciplines, and she had them listen to these cylinders and write down keywords in the texts or subject headings which they felt would be used by people in their fields for retrieving this material. The results of her findings are in charts. They're fairly colorful, but they're quite detailed, and I don't know if you can see them in the back. Could you turn the lights out? And I'll just show them to you really quickly. She has a color code chart here for the colors that she used to separate the different related materials based on the words used by the different experts. And I can explain this in more detail to somebody later on, I think. So we'll skip over a lot of the explanation now, but I'll show you a couple of the charts. And the numbers are the numbers of the cylinders that were listened to, and they're grouped together according to whether if they're related materials and if they were of interest in the reviewer's particular field. Okay, this is a history professor. This is a linguist.
Is this the Rorschach test?
Well, not exactly. This is a fine arts professor of music. And this is a professor of political science and Afro-American history. So there, the bottom line is that there was very, very little overlapping between these disciplines. They all had different ideas of what words would be appropriate. Some of them felt that some materials weren't even of interest in their field. But it was an interesting pilot testing this retrieval by words in the text.
Could I have the lights, please?
There are some things that remain to be done at the end of this project. We're still finding information that we can add to some of the catalog records. We have to verify names of composers and performers in the authority files, and we add that as we find it. But we did find that we could create our own in-house database, and that we used the ARSC AAA cataloging rules, the archival cataloging rules, and the OCLC record and the mark tagging too on the cataloging records. And it was affordable to do it in-house on the budget that they gave to us. Are there any other questions, or is there anything I've left out? Jerry?
Did you include information on matrix
information? The numbers, the dots and number systems on the cylinder rims are, yes, they are entered into. I have a printout of another, not the same record, but I can show you where it appears if anybody's interested in that.
Oftentimes, matrix information is part of the run-in room area.
Repeat the question for the state.
He said that there is often matrix information on the outside the groove area on that surface of the cylinder. Yes, and the Columbias, I think, and the Edisons. I don't believe that they got entered in this.
You're on the very early.
Are they
Edisons
on the worksheets?
Yeah. Well, the earlier Edisons.
Okay.
Okay.
Hi. One more question. No, they're not. They're in on our AT in-house. They're also on the campus mainframe on Spires, which is, what is it?
Spires is a database developed in California and
Stanford.
Yeah, but we chose the same display format so that it looks like an OCLC record again. And then we decided, well, why not also put the words in for the titles? So you see a 245 field and you see the word title next to it. So it's sort of an improved OCLC format.
Okay, we have to stop right here. I'd like to introduce Richard Perry.
Thank you very much. I know there are a lot of questions to follow on this, and I hope that you can speak to Mr.